You are listening to The Potato Podcast, presented by Columbia Media Group. Today's episode is sponsored by GroupAg, post-harvest and storage specialists. They can be contacted at 208-356-7800. Today, David Alexander, publisher of Potato Country magazine, chats with Kasha Dolmer from the University of Idaho. Kasha joined us by phone.
Hello again, this is Dave Alexander, and today we are talking with Kasha Dolmer from the University of Idaho. She is part of a team working on a spore sampling project to test for pathogens that cause disease in onions and potatoes. The team is led by James Woodhall and includes Phil Wharton. The idea is to be able to warn growers when pathogens are found in their area. Kasha, tell us what you do and what is your title at the U of I?
Thanks so much for letting me do this with you. I am the extension seed potato specialist at the University of Idaho. I started here about 2.5 years ago.
You heard the lead-in and what we're talking about, spore sampling today. So what exactly is the spore sampling project? And I know you use some mechanical hardware. Can you just sort of give us spore sampling 101?
Sure. Yeah, the spore sampling project, it actually involves a network of spore traps that are distributed across the state of Idaho to try to collect airborne spores that are, you know, floating in the air. And these spore traps are, they actively suck in air, and they collect the spores into little vials. So each day, a new vial is set up to be collected into, and the spore trap does this automatically, shifts from one vial to another, and just collects spores for the day and puts them into that vial. And then once a week, someone will go and service those spore traps and collect the vials and send them off to a lab to get processed.
What pathogens are you trying to identify? What diseases do they cause?
Well, my focus is on the potato side of things, and so the potato diseases that the pathogens that we're looking for cause diseases like late blight, early blight, and white mold. There's a couple of other diseases that we're looking for the spores that cause those, but it turns out we find those all the time, so it's not very informative.
So tell us what the samples are telling you this year. What are you finding out?
Well, I'm really excited to be able to talk about this because this is the first year that we've really rolled this out. I still consider it the beta version. So it's really exciting to find out that what we were hoping the spore trapping network would do, we're finding out that it actually can do what we're hoping it can do. So what we have found, we've been monitoring spores in the air since the beginning of June. And we have been able to detect all of the disease, all of the pathogens that cause the different diseases that we've been looking for. Not every week. Every week, it's a little bit different what we find. But we've been able to determine that this method works. And that's the exciting part for me. And finding the spores, of course, doesn't mean the disease is present. But it does alert growers to start looking for and maybe upping their game when it comes to particular diseases. So that's what that's how the spore trapping network has worked so far this year. We have detected the different pathogens that we've been looking for at various times throughout the year. In some cases, we've actually found disease. For example, I forgot to mention one of the diseases we look for is botrytis. It's an area that's the pathogen that causes gray mold, that's probably more familiar, or botrytis blight. And we have found those spores in the traps, and of course, when the conditions are right, that disease can be found and develops on the leaves. We've also found spores that cause white mold. And in my area where the spores were detected, I haven't yet detected white mold in the fields, which tells me either the environment wasn't right or the crop wasn't at the right stage to be susceptible. And so the other exciting thing about this network is not only are we looking for the pathogens in the air, but we're also trying to connect that information with weather data, humidity, for example. Many plant pathogens don't produce spores when it's really dry. So coupling this information, not just are the spores present, but are the weather conditions favorable for disease to develop? And so we can couple that information and give that information to growers so they can make management decisions.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about those management decisions. So you warn the grower that this particular spore is there and it causes this disease. What does the grower do at that point? How does the grower benefit from the program?
Well, they have a couple of options with that. When they're given that information, we want to be able to refine this type of information with risk type factors so that a grower can get the information that not only is this pathogen present, but here are the risks, the risk factors for disease to develop. And those risk factors may be based on weather conditions, or it may be based on crop stage or a combination of both. So the grower can be alerted that, okay, these pathogen spores are present. And if we couple that with additional information, like in your area, there might be increased risk for disease development, that might stimulate the grower, agronomist, crop consultant, whoever manages the field, to go out and start looking for these disease symptoms for that particular disease. In some cases, they will just be prompted to potentially start applying a protective fungicide, depending on the disease and the risk. And in other cases, they may be make any changes at all in their program if the risk is very low, for example, or if the pathogen isn't detected.
Okay, so let's say they have a program in place for spraying fungicides. You come along and you say this disease is a danger right now. They could maybe substitute a different fungicide in the program or alter it in some way, and that's how they would benefit. Am I saying this properly?
Absolutely, and that's one way they can benefit. So one way they can benefit is they can be alerted to the potential need of maybe changing their fungicide program, maybe changing out which fungicides they were going to use, adding an additional one or something like that that targets the particular disease that they might be at risk for. In other cases, they might not have to change their regimen at all, and yet other cases, they might be able to eliminate a fungicide application depending on the information that they get from these spore traps.
We were talking last week a little bit about some new technology coming that will allow testing in the field. So you'll be able to collect spores and test them so you don't have to send the samples into a lab, wait for those to come back and wait for the results. So talk to us about that new technology. Who's building that machine, and do you have one? Are you looking to get some?
Well, that's a really exciting part of all of this. Even though we're providing the information in fairly quick turnaround and at a very quick, fairly relatively quick time within a couple of days of receiving a sample, really exciting about the prospect of getting real-time information right there at the field level. And I know of one company in the UK that is developing a prototype that can sample spores from the air, extract the DNA, and perform the special tests all right there within the unit, right in the field. At $30,000 a pop, though, I doubt this particular technology is going to be in farmers' fields very quickly. But we're really excited because we want to be able to partner with this company, validate that technology against the current system that we're using, and see if it might have some way maybe to complement or augment the spore trap network that we're developing for Idaho. If there's some kind of utility, some kind of way that it can be used to augment what we're currently doing, I think that's a really exciting opportunity.
At $30,000, obviously, we're going to have to wait for prices to come down before individuals will start utilizing them. What about the traps that you have right now? I mean, is it feasible that a grower would actually want to do this on his own? As what he'll have to do is take his own spore sampling, send that off to the lab, as we were talking about earlier, and then wait for the lab results, and then make management decisions based on those results.
That's correct.
So is this practical, or is that a practical thing right now?
You know, I've talked with a few growers who have been very excited by the possibility of getting their own spore trap for their own operations, or spore traps, then maybe they'd get multiple spore traps, and tying in with the network. So in other words, they would submit their information to the network too, And not only would they get the information, but, you know, they might agree to let the information be shared with the network. So that'd be an exciting opportunity for them as a grower. But yes, I have spoken to a couple of growers who have expressed willingness to have one of these on their very own farm and that they're managing and servicing and that they're sending in to get results for. But these, the spore traps that we're using currently, the ones that are actively sucking the air in and putting the spores into different vials, one for each day, that particular spore trap is about $4,500. So that's pretty pricey. There's another less active, that's a passive type of spore trap that we're also looking at, and we're comparing those traps with these more expensive ones to see if those might have utility too. Maybe a grower could put multiple of these passive traps, which only are about $300 to $500 around a field. But the sensitivity of those, we don't expect them to be as high, and we don't quite know how well they work with our compared to our current traps. But we're validating those as well, because there's potential to be able to put more of those out, you know, because they cost less. And even if their sensitivity is reduced, if you have more of them, that might compensate for a reduced sensitivity.
So that's got some promise. But it sounds like a lot of it's theoretical at this point and needs further testing. This is a multi-year project, and you've got a grant that's going to go for several years, or how you set there?
We have been funded. This is our second year of funding from the Northwest Potato Research Consortium, which includes the Idaho Potato Commission. And, you know, we're really grateful for that funding, because that's allowed us to really jumpstart this program. And on top of that, we've had tremendous industry support. Several of our traps are actually sponsored, paid for by industry, and they have agreed to have, you know, summer interns or other personnel service those traps for us. And that's an incredibly huge component of this network, having that kind of help, that kind of support, very unique. And it really fills me and the rest of the team with an incredible amount of gratitude to recognize this, the unique and special partnership that's developing. I think that that's one of the exciting components of this project. So it is a multi-year project. Last year, we had initiated some of the spore traps in a very selected, very narrow, limited area. This year, we've had quite a few more put out, expanded the network, and we've already validated we've already proven the concept. So we know the concept works in terms of detecting these airborne spores. And then there's also some pairing with the weather data, so we can build more epidemiological models and refine the recommendation strategy that we want to develop with this network. So that's going to require a little bit more data. And there's been other validations that's been done this year, and one of them has been concluded, that will be concluded shortly, validating the repeatability of the testing. So that's been important to do. And the other component that's underway is development of a website. So that's another component that we want to bring into this network so that people can sign up and put in a username and a password and receive updates either by mail or by text in order to be up to date on what's happening. That's under development. So I think my prediction is that by next year, we'll have a very robust system in place to communicate these results and to process the samples that come in.
You actually answered my next question, and that was about the network. So the website is under development. People will be able to subscribe to some kind of an e-blast or an alert system or something like that, but probably not this year, maybe next year.
Right. If it is rolled out for this year, it'll be later in the season. And so I expect that to be up and running in time for next growing season.
Perfect. Do you have a URL yet?
No, not yet. That is currently under development.
Okay. We'll have you go on again in the future. We can get that information out to people.
I would love to do that.
That'd be great for us as well. Is there anything else you would like to add?
You know, I can't think of anything at the moment. I just appreciate the opportunity to talk about this project. It's an exciting project, and I hope that we can keep having these types of interactions.
Well, we definitely want to thank you for coming on with us today, and it's always exciting to see new technology, and the development of new technology. We're always encouraged by that, and hopefully make growing easier and more profitable in the future. Thank you again for coming on today.
Thanks, Dave. It was my pleasure.
And opinions expressed on this podcast are for informational purposes only, and solely those of the podcast participants, contributors, and guests. They do not constitute an endorsement by or necessarily represent the views of Columbia Media Group or its affiliates.